Your experience has almost completely been in the private sector. What motivated you to run for Congress in the first place?
Well, I think two things. On a personal level, my father told me that it would be a good time in my life to repot myself and serve my country like he did. And he was not, of course, in the political arena. He was in the military service. But so that was my personal motivation, was to take this season in my life as I moved down here to Florida to be with my folks, to do something that would benefit my fellow man and what I think is the greatest country in the world with the greatest opportunities in the world. And so on a personal, emotional level for me and my parents, it felt like a good time to do something like this and share a little bit of what I've learned in my life to help my country if elected. So that was my personal motivation. I think on a more global level, my campaign slogan is really heartfelt, and that is that I believe that this is a good time in our country to have folks from the business arena and the business world as outsiders in the legislative process. I think that's good for us. And the reason is because I think that the world has become much more global, much more competitive, and that competitiveness, or lack of, drives job creation or job destruction in a global world. And we still have policies and legislators that live as if it's the 1990s, where the world wasn't as globally competitive. And so we make more provincial decisions that are not appropriate in a global competitive environment. And so I think that I think the notion of an outside businessman who has experienced global competition and global business, and I've lived in different countries around the world, I think it's a good time in our country, and in fact it's necessary in our country if we're going to start growing the economy again, competing and producing good paying jobs. So that was a main motivation for me, and I think that combining that with my conservative constitutional values creates an unusual candidacy and something that can be helpful for my nation. At least that's the theory of what we are doing here and what we are trying to accomplish.
And let's talk a bit about your past experience in the private sector, in campaigning for the primary election. I know there was some negative emphasis, and this was also mentioned in some local media reports about your time as CEO of Hayes Lemaire's International. The company filed for bankruptcy, manufacturing plants closed, there were more than 1,300 layoffs. But help us put that experience into context. What did you inherit when you walked into that CEO position?
So we inherited a mess, of course. And at the time that we step up and take over the company, where it was more debt than sales. And it was basically Hayes Lemaire was a roll-up from the 90s in the wheel and wheel-related acquisitions on a global basis. And so we had two things that had occurred at the company. Number one, operationally, the company had never been integrated. And number two, there was just top-heavy with debt, which is a common mistake that people make in the corporate world. Over, you know, too expensive acquisitions later on lead to problems. And so we had this mammoth turnaround in front of us in order to put the company operationally competitive in terms of quality, safety, and cost. And then at the same time, straighten out the balance sheet, the ownership, the governance, the debt loads. And it was a whopper of a problem for us, and it was, you know, I felt challenged by it every day, and it took a lot of effort and time to get things straightened out, and you know, but we became by far the global leader in our marketplace, the undisputed world class maker producer of wheels, aluminum and steel wheels, globally speaking. Probably twice as big as our closest competitor, and the only global wheel maker that can do truly global contracts because we had such a great footprint around the world. So we were happy with the company. It's doing great today. But you know, those sorts of turnarounds are hard to do, and you have to make some tough choices while at the same time growing the business. And that's what we tried to do, and that's what I think our team was able to accomplish while we were there. I think that translates to some degree, of course, to the government world, because I believe that we are in a position right now as a country where we have to learn to compete globally in order to, if you will, grow our top line, which means grow the economy in a global context and produce good paying jobs, which is what we had to do and we have to do in private sector. And then secondly, make tough cost choices in order to stay competitive, in order to not to have too much debt. So I think those of us that have run businesses kind of inherently understand those things. I think government gets away from those principles, and therefore having folks like me that have grown the top line, made tough choices on the cost side, and done it in a global context, I think that might be useful for our government. At least I hope so.
Well, let's delve a bit into your platform. You've said that economic growth should be Congress's primary goal. Can you expound on that?
Well, let's say it should be one of their primary goals.
Okay.
For sure. I don't want to say it's, you know, I mean, I think defense and defense of the Constitution, and there's some other things that are very, very important as well. But I think, look, what we have now is a government sector that is getting bigger and bigger as a percentage of our economy. And if you look around the world, both today in the industrial world and also traditionally, historically speaking, as the government sector in any economy gets bigger and the debt in the public sector gets bigger, the economic growth gets smaller. And the lack of economic growth will lead to lack of opportunity for our kids as they graduate from high school, trade schools, or colleges, what have you. And so we are headed on the exact opposite path, and we are making ourselves uncompetitive in a small world. And so I think that we need to change paths so that we can produce good paying jobs. And the way to change that path is to make ourselves competitive so that investment flows into this country. And number two, the other thing is we never talk about is that we have a trade deficit of, you know, probably at least $100 billion a quarter. That's a lot of jobs going out the door somewhere else because of our lack of competitiveness and our bad tax laws. So, you know, my position is that there's a good news story here, that American ingenuity, innovation, and management strength is second to none, but we have to unleash it. And when we do, there'll be, you know, we could really have an economic rally here by making ourselves competitive again, as opposed to growing the size of the government.
Would it be fair to say that a significant component of your economic plan would involve bringing back some policies of the mid-1980s when the U.S. was experiencing sustained economic growth?
Yes, I like a lot of what occurred in the 80s, but a word of caution here. The Chinese weren't making millions of cars in the 80s. The Koreans weren't the great competitors that they are now. The Indians weren't the awesome competitive machine that they are now. And therefore, many of the things that we got away with in the 80s, 90s, and even 10 years ago, we would have a hard time doing now. And so it didn't make what we did in the 80s or 90s wrong for that time period. The competitive landscape was just a lot different. I think that the effective business or corporate tax rate is probably 26, 27, 28%. That's the effective rate. And I think in a global world, I think in the global industrialized world, that average is probably more like 20%. And so, you know, we now have to have tax rates on a business level that make us competitive in that environment so that people will invest here, produce jobs here, and instead of having a trade deficit, maybe a trade surplus, and Americans have more good-paying jobs. So I like some of the supply side economics of the 80s that you may be referring to. But a big word of caution to me is what we did in the past, whether it was under President Reagan or President Clinton or any other president, this is a unique time and place because the competitive landscape is different. And we've never had this kind of trade deficit. So my word to everybody is let's get competitive, and that will take tweaking of the business tax rate for small and big businesses, and that will take tweaking of the regulations that we have so that we can compete with these awesome competitors that are now taking food off our table.
And I wanted to turn for a minute to the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. I know that's something that you would like to see repealed and would work towards that if elected to Congress. But I wonder, with some 8 million people already signed up, do you think repealing that law would be a daunting uphill battle at this point?
In terms of whether it's an uphill battle or not, I have two things. No, just to say, number one, I don't want to sound presumptuous because I have not been to Washington yet. And number two is the world's never static. I believe that this law will be viewed more and more unfairly, number one. Number two, as the president ignores parts of the mandates, I think it becomes more and more unconstitutional. And then the third thing is it will become more and more uneconomical. It will not meet the financial hurdles that it was sold under. Now, those are three pretty big hurdles. And so I think you may want to do this interview in a year or two when the bill is really being paid both by the consumer to the insurance company and by the taxpayers as this act becomes more and more expensive to the taxpayers, and see how people feel about it. So I think your question might be premature here, but I think inherently this law is overkill. We could have solved many of these issues, in my view, many of these healthcare fairness issues, if you will, like portability. I think we could have solved them without overreaching like this bill does. And secondly, it will become uneconomical. It already is. It's unfair. And none of that sounds very American to me. We should have done better. We could have done better. And so I hope we get a shot at doing better in the future on this bill.
And looking back on your predecessor's tenure in Congress, Trey Radel, he was known for being active here in the 19th Congressional District, holding town hall meetings, hearing from constituents. Do you still plan to spend a good deal of time in the district if you're elected versus perhaps other members of Congress who tend to stay in D.C.?
Yeah, I'm almost surprised by the question. The answer is obviously yes. I'm here for the duration. My parents are here. I love it here. I don't want to be anywhere else. I take an occasional trip to visit friends or family, but I'm going to be around here and be in Southwest Florida. I speak Spanish. I was at the family Hispanic fair in Fort Myers on Sunday. And, I view this as a chance to do something for my community and my nation, and so therefore we're going to sprint. We're going to go to the churches, we're going to go to the cultural events, and we're going to, there's only one of me, so it can't be two places at once, but we're going to try to be as accessible as we can and still have time for my parents a little bit of privacy in Bonita Springs. But the answer is yes, and, I'm glad that Trey did that. I think it was the right thing, and I liked his voting record. So, we plan to be here. I'm not jet-setting somewhere else while I'm representing the region. This is other than my parents, this is my number one priority, and I plan to work hard at it.
All right. And my final question here, as I'm sure you're well aware, there's this culture of partisan gridlock that's, been dominating the political climate in recent years. Are there situations where you could potentially see yourself, reaching across the aisle voting with Democrats, or do you plan to more closely align yourself with the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party?
Again, I don't want to speak too much because I'm not there yet and don't understand the actual situation. I haven't met the people involved. However, I am a constitutional conservative, and I think this message that you and I have been chatting about this morning, which is family values, freedom, and economic opportunity through growth of the economy, is a message that translates well to all of our communities. And so I don't think that we and I have to change my value set in order for us to reach a broader audience. I think we have a really good message here, and that everybody wants jobs for their kids and of doing the right things to stoke the economy so that we have a good news story again. I think that will play well. And so I'm hopeful that there are a lot of Democrats that understand that jobs follow competitiveness and competitive follows small government. You know, I'm hopeful that there's a group of those that will agree with that. And if that's the case, even if we disagree on some of these other issues, we ought to be able to get together, because if we do three or four things for our business community, we can have a lot of good jobs in this country. So I'm hopeful that what you say is true, that we'll be able to unite in the middle here on economic growth through tax reductions and deregulation. And I just think that there'll be some Democrats that believe the same things that I do in that regard.
Well, Kurt Clausen, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me, and I like what y'all do, and good luck to you.